to the very hot topic of the week, the influence of China within our national life compared with other nations. Here was the Prime Minister's verdict delivered in Laos this week.
I know it's fashionable to say that you've got to choose between China and the United States. The reality is these are both enormously important powers in every respect, and all of the countries in this region, I know from dealing with their leaders, all of us are committed to working with both.
Prime Minister, articulating what's been a cornerstone of Australia's foreign policy positioning for about a decade now, but for a range of reasons, it's becoming the stuff of a big debate. I mean, it's not often foreign affairs is such a hot topic within Australia, with no real sign of a let-up, as our replay last week of the recent press club discussion between Professor Hugh White and Gareth Evans showed, and it seems to have gone down very well with you indeed. Maybe this is the new normal, because seismic shifts are afoot in our region. And the big question is, are we prepared as a population to deal with them? A decade ago, Hugh White publicly warned we'd need more sophistication, much more, to manage a critical balancing act between the US and China and others. Exactly the debate we seem to be living through right now. The list of challenges is growing. The Ausgrid knockback to Chinese and Hong Kong interests, the Kidman property rejection, the sensations around ex-Labor frontbencher Sam Dastyari and related developments there. So how ideally ought the humble Australian citizen be viewing all this? Two respected contributors joined me late yesterday to offer their perspective. Jeff Raby, our former ambassador to China, now has set up his own consultancy, and Richard Woolcott, one of our most experienced diplomats, former Secretary of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, who contributed to a blog run by ex-senior public servant John Menadue, arguing for a new white paper on Australia's foreign policy. A defence white paper was issued earlier this year, you may recall. I welcome both men.
Hi, Julie.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Jeff, how would you read the current temperature of the relationship between Australia and China? I'm very keen to know how all the various permutations of this are being reported and understood in China.
I think, Geraldine, needs some context in all of this. We have had and do have periods when we have a number of difficulties in the relationship with China. A lot of this stems just from the different way China organises itself and conducts itself. You know, we had a very difficult period in 2009. It went on for the best part of a year, and I mean, people thought the relationship was going very badly, but it came around and came good, and I think we have a pretty good basis for maintaining a strong relationship with China. This current period I don't think is particularly bad, but when you get a bunching of issues as you've set them out, it can create that sense. Look, I think we have enough in common and common and shared interests for us to continue to maintain a strong relationship, and this will be another one of those periods.
I just want to quote to you from The Economist, referring to this issue, referring to the fact that in April, the Turnbull government vetoed a bid by Dakang, a Chinese company for Kidman & Co., the vast outback empire. And then, of course, there was the Ausgrid. And this is very much how they see it. Scott Morrison said, both bids were contrary to the national interest without explaining how. Yet, as we've also learned this week, British firms own 7% of our agricultural land without apparently damaging the national interest, and State Grid already owns shares in several electricity distributors in other parts of Australia. And this is their killer final line. The rules have not changed since those investments were made, but judging by the uproar about Mr. Dastyari, the mood has. I mean, that's a judgment about the Australian perspective, Jeff. I wonder whether the mood is shifting in Beijing.
Yeah, look, you've got to be careful about running all these things together. I mean, it's unfortunate they're happening at the same time, but I don't think they're symptomatic of a structural problem. In China, a lot of it is not noticed. Australia does not feature that prominently in people's minds and thinking here. Occasionally, the nationalistic Global Times gives us a swipe, but it's usually in the context of when we tend to get out in front of regional partners making particularly strident comments about things that go to national sovereignty from the Chinese perspective, such as South China Sea. I think they are pretty much accustomed to being knocked back these days on foreign investment, and I think it's case by case. You don't get a strong sense here that deep unhappiness about the relationship.
Okay, well, let me ask you, Richard Woolcott, because You weighed in last week with a thoughtful piece in this John Menadue-run blog, Pearls and Irritations, about the need for a white paper, which Julie Bishop has flagged, but I don't think she's confirmed. I've been searching my papers to double-check, and I can't quite pin it down, on, in effect, our foreign policy, on our place in the world. And I might add, if we can just listen now, the former Prime Minister Paul Keating said precisely this just last week.
We both need and deserve a nuanced foreign policy which does take account of these big seismic shifts in the world. The fact is Australia needs a foreign policy and it needs it urgently. And Australia does not have a foreign policy. That's the biggest problem.
Now, Richard Wolcott, that's his usual bluntness. Do you agree?
Yeah, I actually spoke to Paul Keating before he made that statement, and I've actually taken a view very like that for probably more than 10 years now. I do not think that we should have taken sides on this issue. After all...
What's this issue? South China Sea, you mean?
Yeah, the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague. Our government, and I think the opposition too, said it's binding. It's not binding. I mean, it doesn't bind the United States. They've refused to be bound by it. China is really reacting to the United States' so-called pivot to Asia, now renamed rebalancing. Now, while China does not share our values and probably never will, it nevertheless wants respect and acceptance of its continuing rise and of what it sees as a legitimate aspiration to be the dominant regional power in its own region. Now, while China will probably be fairly assertive about this, it also, I think, wants and needs stability and will be pragmatic. I think the United States and China are going to need to learn to share power. My own view is a conflict is very unlikely, and the likelihood tends to be exaggerated by the Australian media.
Well, can I just say that what was very vivid in last week's extracts from the Gareth Evans-Hugh White conversation at the Press Club, we had Gareth Evans with a very much a diplomatic background and Hugh White from a defence background, and they had quite different perspectives, almost temperamental styles, evaluating risk. And you do say, Richard Wolcott, that we seem to be in a period of, quotes, fairly intense political and bureaucratic infighting over Chinese activity. What are you getting at there?
Well, I actually watched the Evans discussion, and it's quite clear that there is a considerable controversy going on between what I'd call fairly intense bureaucratic infighting over Chinese activity in the South China Sea and what it really means. Now, I believe the South China Sea is an area of a rising China's dominant influence, just as the US sees Alaska, the Florida Keys, and waters around Hawaii as an acknowledged view of US influence.
Look, what I was really keen about was John Menadue, who used to be head of Prime Minister and Cabinet, he wrote about, in effect, there's a close relationships between think tanks like ASPE, the Department of Defence in Australia, the intelligence community and our defence industry, and that it's actually, it's the military-industrial complex on a small scale that Dwight Eisenhower warned the Americans about, you know, when he was president, said be careful of that group becoming too important. I mean, Jeff Raby, do you think this is a risk that we humble citizens are witnessing quite a barney among senior public servants? We haven't quite grasped what we're seeing.
I'm not sure it's such a big argument because the one side is not very weighty, and the weighty side, as you describe it, from the military intelligence and the think tanks side, is very dominant in terms of shaping policy and has been for some time.
So you think the diplomats are losing the game, as it were?
Well, some. I mean, inside DFAT, there's a strong view that also lines up with the military intelligence view of China. A lot of it is fed and supported by neocon positions coming out of Washington. And a lot of the people who have served in our embassy in Washington are taking those positions, which is dominant in terms of Canberra policy thinking.
It really has been quite an amazing week. We have people accusing the Australia-China Relations Institute at UTS of being a propaganda outfit for the Chinese government, and we have people like Sam Dastyari being sort of massively criticised for, in effect, being a cash for comment. This is what he's been accused of. I just wonder how ordinary citizens are supposed to view all this.
Well, it's come very complicated now. Let me say immediately that, unlike Mr. Dastyari, I thought that what he was alleged to have said and later denied was the position we should be adopting, and that is not taking sides.
Oh, I think he was doing a bit more than that, wasn't he, Richard?
Well, I don't know, but I'd like to say that I've had no contact with the Chinese ambassador or Chinese embassy, and I've taken no money from China, but I strongly believe that our policy is very out of date and we need a much more appropriate and updated balance in our relationships between the United States and China, and also Russia, Indonesia, Vietnam. We're dealing with a very changed world, but we don't recognise that change. And when we talk about the legal international order, we're talking about an order which was established essentially by the United States after World War II. Now, China, of course, and countries like India, Indonesia, Russia, they want to play a role in updating an international order suitable to this century, not the last century.
Jeff, the Lowy interpreter has just referred to the fact that the Financial Review is now running an Agents of Influence series, and they say, in line with the media's shift from a focus on Chinese investment to a broader discussion of China's influence in Australia, and one article has cast a shadow over the million-plus ethnic Chinese in Australia as potential members of Beijing intelligence, quote, vacuum cleaner. Now, so, yes, you both laugh, but this kind of reporting does raise issues, does it not, about how the media shapes public perception of links between the diaspora and the Chinese state? And I think a lot of citizens are starting to sit back and think, gosh, what ought we think?
First of all, I'd like to make a point that I share Richard's view on the South China Sea, and I, like him, have never taken an RMB from a Chinese, even though I might live in Beijing. All my clients are Australian.
Look, but you've got to get on with the Chinese to have a business, though, don't you, Jeff?
Well, you have to get on with the Chinese to have a proper foreign policy in the region as well. So I think with Dastyari and the payments and so on, it's an exaggeration to say that all this is part of some Beijing orchestrated plot to peel Australia off from the US alliance. I've seen some think tanks saying that over the last week or so. I can assure you that I don't think anyone in Beijing's lying awake at night thinking about how you peel Australia off from the US security alliance. That is a fundamental cornerstone of our security, and it's known and understood. And the Chinese are very practical and pragmatic people when it comes to foreign policy. Beijing doesn't need to use minor business figures in Sydney to exert influence if it wants to. We don't sort of matter that much in terms of China's worldview. But I do agree very much with Richard that we need a policy that is contemporary and reflects the contemporary reality of today. As for the vacuum cleaners of Chinese security, there are many, many Chinese in Australia because they don't like the Chinese system and don't share the values of the system here and don't want to live in China. It's a very unfortunate exaggeration.
And one final, I mean, there's been so much written about this. John Brumby, who's the national president of the Australia-China Business Council, of course, former Victorian Premier, wrote again this week, our report asks a simple question, are we prepared for the day when 25% or more of Australia's services exports will be destined for China? If we get the answer right, 1 million new jobs can be created in Australia in the next 10 years, and we might find ourselves talking in years to come about another China boom, but a much smarter and cleaner one than the last. Richard Wolcott, this is the balancing act, isn't it, that we have to play, given that the Americans, our great and powerful friend, I don't think they like us talking like that.
They may not, but let me say, I've been associated with the Australian-American Leadership Dialogue since it started in 1992. But I've always considered that our relationship with the United States should be based not simply on supporting what the United States position is, or even on good relations for their own sake. We need to determine what is in Australia's national interest, and I don't think we've done that. We're locked into an out-of-date policy, and recently, Jeff's probably seen it, but I thought, Jeff, that the report that came out called Partnership for Change on the Australia-China Joint Economic Report, I thought that was a very impressive report, but as Geraldine says, there's so much going on, it's hard for the public to work out which way to go. But I think there really is only one way to go, and all my experience with the United States is they will take you for granted, but they just know you're going to agree, but they will listen to you if you come forward with different ideas.
Very quick final comment to you, Jeff.
I fully agree again with Richard, but also it's our duty as a close ally and friend of the United States to constantly talk to them about where we have points of difference and where we will behave differently. And that is what a true ally does for the United States. Be very clear about where you agree and where you will have points of difference. And the US is a great power like China, and they understand countries pursuing their interests.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, this is just... This is about, what, part 40 or something, rather. There'll be many more to come. Jeff Raby and Richard Walcott, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, my pleasure, Geraldine.
Dr. Jeff Raby speaking to us from Beijing, and Richard Walcott, former diplomat and secretary of the Department of Foreign Affairs.